Well, good morning again to everyone, and happy graduation Sunday. All right, let's have some excitement out there. You guys remember what it feels like to graduate, right? And the graduates in the crowd, I see Deja, Sophia's just soaking it all in, just celebrating back there somewhere, I'm sure. But reading her new Bible, amen to that. Yeah, there you go, breaking it in, getting it ready. So how does it feel? I mean, how does it feel to graduate from high school? I mean, I remember when I graduated from high school 5 years ago. Is it really that surprising? Kind of looked like I could, you know, maybe 5 years ago it was, but we actually have our 20-year high school reunion this summer. Yep, so feeling it. But I'm excited. It'll be a great time together. But I was, you know, just thinking back to my graduation in that time and what an accomplishment that was. And now fast forward 20 years later, and I just think, man, time flies. Time absolutely flies. It's amazing the way that time works. And I want our graduates, and really for all of us, as we think about that accomplishment, to just soak it up for them. Just savor the moment and enjoy the time. And I do have a message for our graduates today, all two of them, and then I know there's a couple other in the crowd out there, but I do have a little something else for everybody as well. There's something in here for everyone, so don't feel like I forgot about you. But again, for our graduates, I mean, you've just completed a monumental task in finishing high school. And when you think about our school systems, they're institutions of learning, right? And I encourage you to take that learning and what you gain from that experience and use that learning to the best of your ability. You know, life is about learning. And the best learning happens with the right teacher. And the right teacher is the one who knows what they're talking about. Can I get an amen to that? Right? Those are the best teachers. They know what they're talking about. You know, unfortunately, the greatest teacher ever to walk the face of the earth has already come. He's left behind a legacy, a life, and teachings that we can take and apply to ourselves. And he was so great because he taught the most important things in life. Right? It's easy to get caught up in distractions and things that don't really matter that much. But you see, our teacher, the greatest teacher, came and taught the most important things in life. And he knew what he was talking about because he lived it. And he was able to teach with authority because he knew what he was talking about because he was living the life he was calling his students to. And of course, I'm talking about Jesus, right? We all knew that, right? Jesus, the greatest teacher of all time. And one of the things I love about his teaching is that his teaching focuses on the truth. In fact, Jesus had this really interesting interaction with Pontius Pilate. While he was in Jerusalem, he had been arrested at that time, and Pontius Pilate was governing and ruling in that area at that time. And Jesus appears before him, and he says this. Check this out. John 18, verse 37b. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth." That's why Jesus came. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Let's think about that for a minute in the context of our present world. How does our world view truth? And what are the consequences of viewing truth that way? In our present world, truth has been attacked, manipulated, if you can really do that, distorted, and many times downright rejected. And so I want to just briefly highlight a few cultural and philosophical ideas that have developed over time and where we see ourselves today in this present, you know, philosophical era. And I'm not going to get really like deep and into it all that much, but I just think it's important for us to understand the times. So modernism is something that came to be around the 1800s and through the 1900s, and the kind of thinking associated with modernism was individual subjectivity. And what I mean by that is, what's true for me is subjective, and it's true for me, but it might something different might be true for somebody else, right? It's all subjective. There's no ultimate truth in life. It also centered around scientific explanation and rationalization. So, and I'm not knocking science by any means, but the thinking was, if I can observe it, then it's real and that's truth. Anything outside of that, not true, not real, not worth focusing on. And so then, after modernism, came postmodernism, which focused on knowledge and moral relativism. And what that means is, there's no ultimate morality in life. There's no moral code. What's good and right and wrong for you might be different for somebody else. There's no universal truth there. And the same with knowledge. It's relative. You know, it changes. And then you had, and this is our current era, is post-truth. Let's just think about that terminology right off the bat. Post-truth. Can we really move past truth? Relating to, and I'll just read the description here, relating to or denoting circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to emotion and personal belief. So truth isn't really that important anymore. It's really about what do you believe? What do you feel? That's what matters. And then look at the last part of that, a time period in which truth no longer matters. We're past truth now. We don't need truth anymore. We've moved beyond that. It's really feelings and personal beliefs that matter. I want to let that sink in for a minute. And if you think about it, people that subscribe to this kind of thinking or this way of being, they're probably not going to come up to you and say, well, you know, it's just, I'm a post-truth person, and, you know, it's really all about feelings. They might not come right out and say it, but it exists at a certain level. And if you're not aware of it, you can get into that kind of thinking yourself and not even know. And that's scary. If we think about truth as not existing, that's a scary place to be. You think about the implications of that kind of thinking. Now, that's not going to be the focus of the sermon today. The sermon today is going to be about truth and how we can know truth in our lives. And again, that's the greatest teacher of all time came to testify to the truth and enable us to experience truth in our lives and the freedom that comes along with that. I want to hear an amen to that. Truth and the freedom that comes with it. So the title of my sermon today, The Truth. You can't handle the truth. No, I'm kidding. Hopefully you can handle the truth. If you're old school, you might know where that came from. But in any case, the truth. John 8, verses 31 and 32. To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So a really simple verse here, right? I encourage you to go back and read the context. I'll give you a little context here just for clarity's sake. But Jesus is at the Festival of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths. It's one of the three main celebrations of the Jews, and it was happening in Jerusalem. So he goes and he's doing all kinds of teaching and speaking during that time. And he finds himself in the midst of Pharisees and Jews. Pharisees were Jews, but there, you know, there's these two groups there. And he has this discourse and this interaction with them. And one of the things that he says to them, and he's talking to the Pharisees initially, he says, "I am the light of the world." Wow. That's a pretty bold statement. He says, "I am the light of the world. I am," he doesn't say it here, "but the way, the truth, and life." This is what Jesus is after with them. "You need to understand and know who I am." He's speaking truth to power. And then he starts talking about some other things with the Pharisees and with the Jews. He says that his testimony is valid because the Father attests to his testimony, not just Jesus himself. He goes on to say the Jews, that they're worldly. I mean, he basically just calls them right out. He's like, "You're worldly. Your minds are about this world. I'm about heavenly things." So he just calls them out. And through all of that, there's this group of Jews that believe him. I mean, look what the text says there, right? It says, to the Jews who believed him. So he's saying all these bold things. He's making these claims. He's calling them out. And there's a group of Jews that they believe what he's saying. But he just doesn't stay there. You know, I love that about Jesus, right? He's not just about, okay, people feel good about me and the stuff that I'm teaching. No, no, no. He goes right for it, right? He doesn't hold back. And so he looks to those Jews who believed him, and he said, if you really want to be my disciples, okay, it's not enough just to believe. You have to hold to my teachings. You have to do what I'm saying. It's not enough to just think about these things and understand them. You have to apply them to your lives. Then you're my disciples. Then you're my learners. Then you're my followers. And what do you get out of that? What's the byproduct of that way of living? Truth. You will know the truth. And that truth will set you free. So how do we get to the truth? We have to hold to the teachings of Jesus. That's what he's saying here. That's what he's encouraging his crowd with. And as a result of that, man, what a blessing that we can know the truth. We don't have to guess if truth exists or what is truth or where is it. We can know the truth. And then he says, that truth will set you free. And to that crowd, I mean, this is a crowd who understood or should have understood oppression, right? I mean, they were under the rule and domain of the Romans, of the Roman Empire. And I'm like, freedom, yeah, this is what we want. This is the kind of people that we want to be. But their reaction actually later is, free from what? We don't need to be free. But you see, the freedom that Jesus is talking about is true freedom. And that's freedom from sin. And the lie is that sin doesn't exist and it doesn't really oppress. And actually following the teachings of Jesus is really, that's oppressive and it's going to limit my life and I'm only confined to these things that this person said. And it's like, wait a second. No. Outside of that living, underneath the teachings of Jesus, that's slavery. That's slavery to sin. That's slavery to the Father of lies. The father of lies, Satan. And so, let's talk a little bit more about this whole disciple thing. What is a disciple? What does it mean to be a disciple? It means constant learning from Jesus. The disciple is literally the learner, for that is what the Greek word means. All of his life, a Christian should be learning more and more about Jesus. The shut mind is the end of discipleship. But I want to take that a little bit further. Because the shut mind is not only the end of discipleship, but it closes the door to truth. And the freedom that that truth brings. So a decision not to be a disciple is really a decision to not embrace the truth. And it's a rejection of freedom. That's what that decision is. The disciple is a learner who learns in order to do. The truth which Jesus brought is designed for action. And what does Jesus teach? What is Jesus' teaching and truths about? The real values of life. In the truth of Jesus, we see what things are really important and what are not. Right? We all have that question, to what do I give my life to? And our graduates are probably contemplating that. For the rest of us, we probably contemplate that on a regular basis. What do I give my life to? To a career, to material possessions, to pleasure, or to freedom, or to truth, or to Jesus? That's the kind of teacher that Jesus is. He brings the most important things in life to light and opens us to truth and to freedom. And again, it is only found and discovered in obedience to the teachings of Jesus. You know, flag football is a great game.
Come on, bro.
Flag football is enjoyable and fun and sometimes painful. And someone may or may not have been tackled yesterday during flag football. So we'll talk about that later. We'll get to that. But so a few of, anyways, so there's some blank stares out there. So a few of us played flag football yesterday. So I want to just pull up a picture of our crew here. So this is, we had about 10 guys. We're at West Point here. Big shout out to Chris Reinhart, who got us access to the field here. I mean, if you want access to West Point, Chris is the person to talk to. I mean, I think that our next game is actually going to be at the football stadium. That was the challenge to him. But in any case, I do want to just highlight what's going on in this scene back here, just so we can get a picture of what's happening. So, here's Mike Polano back there posing with his pink camo tights on. We weren't sure if they were Corinne's or his, but anyway, he rocked them out yesterday. Then we have George over here texting. I think he was asking Tiff to come and pick him up, hoping that the game was over at that point. Then there's Junior right here who's dumping Ellie's water out. Ellie was on the opposite team, so he's, you know, trying to sabotage that. Ellie's looking at the time there, praying that the water break could be extended. It was pretty warm out there. And then here's me, I'm bending over, and I noticed that a guy on the other team, his shoes were untied, so I just thought I'd serve and, you know, tie his shoes for him. And then, here's McCullough back here looking at me, waiting for me to get done so he can tie my cleats together. That's what he was contemplating. Which was payback for tackling him. So I was the one that I tackled McCullough as he caught a touchdown pass in the end zone. I will give it up to him for that. But it was a great time together. But, I was thinking about this sermon, and I was thinking about sports and games and flag football. And, you know, the truth plays a big role in the game of flag football, okay? Plays an important role. You set up the ground rules and the parameters. And as long as you know those standards and you play within the confines of those standards, you are free to play the game, right? To the best of your ability, you are free to play the game. But once you violate those standards, you will be penalized, right? You will be penalized as long as the referees see it, or if you're just honest and truthful. Now, we didn't have any referees out here, so it was more of an honor code system. And most of us played within that system. But there was one individual who had a harder time staying within the confines of those standards and rules yesterday. And in fact, at one point, the person said, "Did Irby really say that that was a rule? Did he really say that, you know, I couldn't check somebody as they came across the field and didn't have the ball in their hands? Did Irby really say that?" And I was like, I've heard this somewhere before. The Garden of Eden, I think it was like, did God really say that? Did he? But don't worry. God took care of this person. Later in the game, he lost the bottom of his cleats. It's completely tore off. Okay, that did happen. I'm not saying that God did it, but. And I'm not going to mention any names, but the person's name does start with J and ends with Unier, but I won't say his name. And I'm totally busting his chops. Actually, at one point, he's like, "Are you going to use me in the sermon tomorrow?" And I was like, "I've already been thinking about it, bro." But it was a great time together. But I do think it offers a great illustration for what I'm talking about here with the truth. In football, there are rules to adhere to, right? Those parameters, these teachings, if you will. And if you adhere to those, you are free to play the game. You cannot say to a referee, "Well, that rule might be true for the other team, but for me, it's not really true." Or, "I'm going to make up my own rules about this game, and I'm going to play with it." Well, then you're not really playing the game. And so Jesus, right? Let's think about Jesus. He came to give us the truth about life, about who God is, what life is really all about, who we are as people and how we can be close to God. And how if we stay within those teachings, which are not oppressive, we know the truth and that truth will set us free. But if we deny that truth, if we live outside of that, he's not necessarily there condemning us on the spot, although that, you know, may happen. I mean, we may even feel good about our lives, right? But if we're living outside of that teaching, of his teachings, of his way of being, we are slaves to sin. And we are not free. And we don't know the truth. And the truth becomes confusing and cloudy. And it's like, what is really going on here? But the reality is, whether or not you believe that truth exists, some point you will come up against the truth. In this life, possibly, or in the life to come. And so we have a decision to make. Are we going to embrace truth now? Or are we going to subscribe to the ways of the world and the thinking of the world and reject truth? And that scares me to think about that. What is life going to be like if I just reject truth? And then time's up. Our life is a mist, right? We are only allotted a certain time, and we think that we have so much time in life, but it flies. It goes like that. And we say we're going to make a decision about Jesus, or we're going to turn our lives around later, but then later never happens. It misses us. We miss the boat. And then later becomes too late. Too late. We've got to see that Jesus is the greatest teacher of all. We got to see his teachings for the value that they are and hold unswervingly to them. Delighting in the truth, knowing that there is truth there. And that truth will set us free. Thanking him and God the Father along the way. And the reality for some of us in the room, whether we identify as a disciple or not, we are actually more students of falsity and lies. Students of things that don't really matter. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be on social media, but when we subscribe to the thinking and the rules of social media and the nightly news and the newspaper, and again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be reading those things, but when that becomes our way of thinking and being, that's a problem. That kind of life, where feelings rule and personal belief rules, think where that leads. It leads to pain and destruction. And when we find ourselves there, there's no one we can blame but ourselves. You can't blame Facebook and Twitter or you know, I don't know. I'm not even going to say different news stations, but, you know, you can't blame them for that. It's your choice. You are an autonomous being. So what do we do? How do we proceed with this understanding of truth? Well, Jesus already told us, but he says it differently in another place. So let's just look at this real quick. Matthew 7, so the end of the greatest body of teaching this world has ever seen. The Sermon on the Mount, he says this, Matthew 7, 24 through 25. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, they're like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet, it did not fall. Because it had its foundation on the rock, on the teachings of Jesus, on the truth. That's what happens when storms come. I'm not saying that storms aren't going to come. Jesus never said that. But your life will hold up if you're holding on to the truth and you're obedient to Jesus. And again, it's the same teaching that he gave the Jews. He's just, you know, saying it to a different audience. And it comes again at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, which one Bible scholar said it's one of the greatest gifts to humanity, the Sermon on the Mount. And I want to speak to, you know, different groups of people in the crowds today. So, you know, with this idea in mind, to our two graduates. So I'm going to single you out first, okay? The graduates. I encourage you to look at the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And you have a Bible now that you can actually, we gave to you today. No, I'm kidding. So just to remind you. No, but really, I mean, you know, we understand that as, I mean, that's a precious gift, but especially those teachings. I mean, look at those teachings and think about how those relate to your life. And I'll get into some specific teachings in there in just a minute. And as you apply those to your life, watch how your life changes. It will change your life. For those that are visiting with us today, I won't single you out. I'm not going to have you stand up and raise your hand. But if you are visiting with us today, we are grateful that you decided to come and worship here with us on Sunday. And so if you're visiting with us and you aren't familiar with the teachings of Jesus, especially in the Sermon on the Mount, I encourage you to ask somebody who's here today, who's a member of the church, who can guide you through that and teach you about those teachings and show you how to apply them to your life. Now, disciples of Jesus, I have a question for you. How well do you know the Sermon on the Mount? How well do you know the teachings in one of the greatest gifts to humanity? Could you recite a lot of those teachings? Or maybe the whole thing? Could you recite those? Remember, as a disciple, you are a follower and learner of Jesus. We need to know these. And we need to be living those out. Could you recite it? You know, some of us know the lyrics to secular music more so than we know the Sermon on the Mount. I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to secular music. It's not a statement about that. But if we know those lyrics better and we can recite those more readily than the Sermon on the Mount, that's a problem. That's an issue. And we need to be real about that. So I'm going to be a little bit more specific. I want to talk to the men, specifically the husbands in the room. Do we know and apply the teachings in the Sermon on the Mount about adultery and lust? It says in there, don't even look at a woman with the intention to lust after her. With the intention to lust. Don't even look at a woman like that. Do we apply that to our lives? This can be a challenging time of year to hold to that, right? It's summer out, it's nice out, you walk around, you know, this area or the mall perhaps or other places, and the clothes are less and less. And so it becomes difficult to hold to that. But we need to be men of integrity and hold to those teachings. Women, wives, I want to talk to the wives briefly. Do you know what the Sermon on the Mount says about divorce? Do you know what it says? Do you know what it says in other places about divorce? And you think, take that a step back and think about, how am I thinking about my husband? Because you can divorce someone in your mind and in your heart and still be married to them. How are you thinking about your husband? Parents in the room, do you know what the Sermon on the Mount says about asking, seeking, and knocking? Now, sometimes life, home, kids, career can be challenging. Are you continually asking and seeking help in those areas from God? I mean, Jesus says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open to you. But sometimes we give up so easy on those prayers. Keep battling. Campus students, do you know what the Sermon on the Mount says about letting your yes be yes? Following through with your word. Hey, I said I was going to do this thing, and so I'm going to commit to it and follow through. And for all of us, do we know what it says about loving our enemies? Not worrying. Seeking the kingdom first. Judging others. And the difference between true and false disciples. It says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. That challenges me every time I think about it. Because it's only the one who does the will of God. Not just thinks about it, not just believes in it, thinks it's a nice idea, but does the will of God. That person will enter the kingdom of heaven. So I encourage us, get in the Sermon on the Mount this week. Get into the teachings of Jesus. Work to memorize it. Apply it each day and enjoy the truth and freedom that you get as a result of that way of being. So let's have hearts that truly desire the truth in our lives. Let's have hearts that admire Jesus as the greatest teacher ever. Let's get excited about his teachings. Make it our number one priority to live those out in our lives, delighting in the fact that as we do so, we are pleasing God. And let's hold unswervingly to them, living them out day to day and moment to moment, building our lives on the bedrock of truth. And to him be the glory forever and ever. And the people said,
Amen.
Amen.